Think Grant Part 3. I'm your host, John Stabler, and with me, as usual, Stephen Brett.
Evening, John.
So, we've had more positive feedback. We're doing another show. From the feedback we've had a lot of people just, you know, giving us constructive criticism. Some people just saying they love it, which was quite surprising how much people enjoyed it. They were willing to sit down and listen to us for an entire hour.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you for that, everyone.
Yeah,
do appreciate it.
A big shout out I'd like to say to Justin, who only the other night said to me, when I was online, he said, "Love it," and he was quite positive about it. So hello to Justin.
Hi, Justin. I'd also like just to give a quick mention to Mark Pez and Douglas, who mentioned to me a story about a bear driving a car in the United States. Thought we might want to discuss it. We can't really rant about that one, unfortunately, but certainly worth a mention that...
So, a bear driving a car?
A bear got into a car and managed to knock it into gear and managed to, you know, roll it down the road somewhat.
Was this like a free-roaming wild bear?
It was indeed. It was just a random event. The bear, you know, quite enjoyed it by all accounts, and was apparently a lot better than the student who usually drove the car.
I'm not surprised by that.
Why are you not surprised?
I was going to ask a stupid question. I was going to say, was it a pet bear? But I thought, who keeps a bear as a pet? Don't say Christopher Robin.
I was going to say the Addams Family and Gentle Ben.
I would also like to mention, for listeners, that this is actually the second time we've recorded this podcast.
It is indeed.
Now, I'm not going to point any fingers, but somebody lost the audio file.
It wasn't me.
Okay.
It was, in fact, my computer. I take no responsibility
for it. A workman never blames his tools.
That's right, a workman never blames his tools. I wasn't working.
Now, I'm not one of these PC fanboys or anything like that.
Oh, come on, don't degenerate this into a Mac versus PC.
No.
Everyone knows a Mac is, generally speaking, better than a PC.
Okay, I'm not interested in that, but I would just like to point out it is a fact that the machine that lost the sound file was a Mac. Do I speak the truth?
You do speak the truth.
Right, okay. I think that's fair. You know, we'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to...
Don't try and point score.
Okay. Now, the reason I mentioned it, instead of just trying to be professional and pretend it didn't happen, because nobody would have known, apart from you tweeting on Wednesday.
Yeah, tweeting that, hey guys, it's going to be ready on Friday, it's in the can, it's all done.
Followed very swiftly by a tweet saying,
actually, no. Yeah.
So, but the reason I mention it is that we're probably going to slip up tonight and say something like, when I said this before.
Yeah.
I'm guaranteed to say that because we've read more into some of the stories that we talked about, so we might actually have extra insights. All I can say is we haven't really changed our mind on anything.
No, not at all. You know, some further insight has provided a different slant on certain stories, but I think generally our views do remain the same as generally about it.
Okay. Right, so I'm going to jump off for the first story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I took an interest in this one, mainly because of what we did last week. If you remember last week, we had the rape trial of an Arab man accused of raping a Jewish woman. Can you, for people that missed last week, can you give a little synopsis?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the basic story was that an Arab man met a Jewish girl in a bar. You know, they obviously got on quite well because they went off that same night to another building. It didn't actually specify that it was a hotel or anything like that, and had sex. The woman then found out that the man was actually an Arab and not a Jew like he had claimed, and so pursued him through the court for rape because she felt she'd been lied to.
Yeah, and originally when we covered this, we both thought, at first, yeah, deception, not good. But I think we both agreed afterwards that you can't claim rape just because somebody fibbed about.
Absolutely. I think we both agreed that, you know, morally there was an issue there in the fact that he'd lied. But in actual fact, why is there a criminal proceeding against it? Because it was consensual sex all the way through.
Okay. Now this story, I'll read the headline. Preston rapist thought girl was 16. This is a story about a 19-year-old Junaid Bouta from Frenchwood, Preston. He contacted a girl on a website, and they met up, hit it off. Apparently, they had sex, and then went on a date.
That's something which cracks me up about this. They had sex, then went on a date.
Yeah,
Brilliant.
I mean, I've heard of speed dating,
It takes you to a different level, doesn't
but
it?
this is great, you know. That's now the problem was this girl had proclaimed to be 16 on the website. I'm thinking this is something like Facebook or something like that. It's one of these social networking
I
sites,
believe from what I read, it was actually Facebook.
right? So she said on her Facebook, "I'm 16." She even made postings on Facebook saying, "I'm leaving school this year."
Done the GCSEs, that sort of thing.
Yeah, giving the impression that she was 16, but the problem was she was only 12. Okay, so obviously this is a case of statutory rape.
Which is slightly different to rape, which is interesting to explain that statutory rape is obviously where there's sex between well, it doesn't matter whether you're, what age the man is really, does it? If just the woman's under the age 16, it's statutory rape, but does that apply to the man as well?
I don't know. It does. It applies both ways. The only thing, and I find it in a lot of previous rape stories I've seen like this, is if they're both under 16, you'll quite often find that even though technically they both can't give consent and all this, very often the boy will be criminalized, even though he is under 16 himself. But that's by the by. So this guy was 19, so he's been done for statutory rape, which technically is correct.
By the letter of the law is absolutely correct, yeah.
I agree with that. And the sentence reflected this because it's
I think it was 6 months suspended for 18 months.
So the judge has obviously seen that the poor guy was deceived. Obviously he is guilty, but the suspended sentence reflects that. It wasn't rape. It was
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the judge made a point of saying that this guy was not in any way a sexual predator and hadn't done any grooming or such things, which you know, sort of the language you sort of tend to hear when you hear about paedophiles.
He did say that maybe the guy might want to check their age next time.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's an error of judgment. Error of judgment doesn't, necessarily mean that you're a criminal.
So the reason I brought this up is obviously last week we had this scenario where there was deception, and so it was rape because of the deception. So if the Israeli courts had their way in this case, the boy could obviously perhaps pursue the girl for rape because she deceived him.
Absolutely, there's no doubt about that using that same logic. I do, I am quite thankful, generally, the British justice system isn't ruled by politics quite the same way as the Israeli system clearly is. But the thing which really concerned me the most, really, about this story is the fact that, as well as the suspended sentence, this guy's gonna sign on to the sex offenders register for the next 7 years, which I think is more than a little bit extreme. I mean, sure, what he did technically was a sex crime. However, the evidence was clear. I mean, he bought the girl a train ticket home and bought her a full adult fare to send her home, and that was something she used in his defence. And as we said, the judge quite clearly said that okay, it was an error of judgment, but you're not some kind of sexual predator, and to then therefore have his life ruined by having to sign on the sex offenders register for the next 7 years, I think is pushing it a bit too far.
Yeah, and this isn't the judge's fault. This is a case of bad legislation. The government, when they put the sex offenders register and the surrounding legislation into place, they used this blanket where they said anybody who's guilty of committing a sex crime has to go on the sex offenders register.
Yeah, I mean, okay, like I said, by the letter of law, he has committed a crime, so yeah, maybe he should have to sign on to the sex offenders register, but surely the same rules as apply to his sentencing should apply to this signing on. So, it should, I think, should only be, say, for 18 months, or, as you actually said the other night, it should be suspended.
Yeah, suspend the, only if he commits
Another crime.
another crime should actually happen. But this was just another case of the government enacting laws because of public outcry over paedophiles and a lot of scare in the media.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was a knee-jerk reaction, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it's badly thought out legislation. Unfortunately, this case, although it's highlighted this, that I haven't seen any mention of somebody actually saying, well, maybe we need to go and fix the legislation.
Well, no, because I don't think really any commentators have really picked up on the fact that he's got to sign on to the sex offenders register for 7 years.
And it's a pretty rough stigmatization being on the sex offenders
Well, of course it
register.
is. I mean, it ruins the guy's life in so much as, he will never be able to work with children in those 7 years if that was what he wished to do. He wouldn't necessarily be able to work in mental health or anything like that. If he wanted to emigrate at all, he'd be completely scuppered on doing that because obviously he's got a sex offenders record. All in all, I think, as you said, it's really poor legislation. And, yes, there should be legislation there to protect the public from, sexual predators, but this guy clearly isn't. And, I actually do feel some sympathy for him.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the problem is with the sex offenders register is it's not just rapists or child molesters that are going to get on there because it's a loose term, any sex crime. You'll find a lot of people can end up on there simply for looking at the wrong type of porn. So again, it's defining a law badly, and it covers too much. And you end up criminalizing a very large number of people.
And I guess just to clarify on the topic of the wrong sort of porn, we're not talking about child pornography necessarily or anything like that. We're talking about things which, maybe, I think the government passed legislation in there about the violent sex. So,
Yeah.
what something maybe misconstrued, well, not misconstrued, but maybe considered to be violent sex could see you.
Yeah, and it's pretty subjective, deciding on what kind of sex is violent, how violent does it have to be before all of a sudden it comes under this legislation. And of course, it's people that have this type of pornography on their hard disks, on their PC, or maybe on a DVD or something, that they've got stashed away, they forgot it's there, and now technically they are in, it's because this law's come into place.
Yeah, they're no guilty if they're found with it.
Yeah, sure. So that's that. Have you got anything interesting?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a topic which is quite close to my heart, which was the subject of British Gas's profits this week.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to try not to, spout the company manifesto here, but I just wanted to sort of pass a comment on it. I mean, what do you think, first of all? We're talking about a 98% rise in profits in the first half of the year.
Well, I mean, good luck to them. As long as, it's profits because they've performed well, rather than they've been ripping people off, and I've seen no evidence of that, then I'm pretty happy with that. I'm just wondering this story, I mean, I've seen it on the BBC website. Has it appeared anywhere else? Has anyone else covered it with a bit of agenda?
Yeah, I mean, it does get out and about there, really, to be honest with you. I mean, you instantly get the knee-jerk reactions from places such as, Consumer Focus and the other another sort of consumer group, which name escapes me at the moment, but which is headed up by a lady called Anne Robinson. We always, as a company, come in for criticism from these groups. Sometimes it's justified, I will be honest, but I think, criticism of the profits in this case, well, I think are probably a little bit harsh. The company has increased the size of its business this year, which has added to some profit. Obviously, we had the very cold winter as well, which helped add to it. And during that time, we actually lowered our prices as well. So, I think as a company, British Gas is fairly responsible. And actually, I just find that there always seems to be a knee-jerk reaction to any energy company making a profit. If this was Tesco's making 98% profit in the first half of the year, everybody saying, "Oh, well done, Tesco's, pat on the back. It's good to see a British company doing so well." And I guess that's one of the things which I think, you know, needs to be picked up on, is the fact that British Gas is a British company, and despite the current financial difficulties, they're performing pretty well.
Yeah,
and good luck to them because of it.
Quite recently, they've created some more jobs as well.
Yeah, you know, in South Wales, they've opened up an energy academy in Tredegar, so you know, to a deprived area, they've brought jobs and, you know, the potential to train people up so they can get skills to go out and get jobs in the energy field as well. So, you know, I think British Gas are actually a fairly good company for looking after its customers and trying to do a bit for the communities which it works in as well.
Okay, I got a happy story for you, or at least something that'll make you grin a little bit. 5-year-old boy wins defamation case against Lidl.
Yeah, genius.
Young 5-year-old boy, he was in Lidl with his mother when a shop assistant grabbed his arm and made an accusation that he'd stolen some crisps.
Yep.
So, first of all, there's the matter of grabbing his arm. Apparently, they grabbed his arm too firmly, so, you know, there's some bruising, so you got a case of assault there, perhaps. But
yeah,
it was the defamation that everyone picked up on and what interested me, because I'm quite surprised that they were able to win on defamation, because as far as I'm aware, defamation is a pretty strict definition. It's not just a case of saying something bad about somebody or something that's not true.
Yeah,
you know, you've got to be able to demonstrate that you've actually harmed that person. And I just find it quite hard to believe that a 5-year-old's reputation can be damaged.
Well, you know, I guess really what you're looking at there is how it was approached by the shop worker. I mean, if the shop worker has grabbed this kid's arm and has, you know, shouted something along the lines of "Stop thief," then, you know, clearly shouting out that he's a thief to the whole world may be considered to be defamation to some extent, because, you know, tarring that child with a brush for the rest of his life.
But is it really... Yeah, but who's going to know? You know, apart from now that the story's run, you know, if he hadn't sued, who would have known? Apart from maybe...
Well, you know,
in the shop?
He might never be able to get a job in that village again.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I just think it's kind of laughable that, you know, you hear all these cases of millionaires, you know, suing other people for defamation. You never hear of something so...
it's
trivial.
Just part of where, you know, society is becoming more litigious, isn't it? Really, it's litigious or litigious? I'm not sure.
Litigious.
You know, and yeah, I mean, the kid's got €7,500 in his back pocket. Good for him, but I do think it's maybe a little bit extreme. I think at the end of the day, okay, as far as I can understand from the story, the boy had actually bought the crisps and the mother had a receipt, so maybe the store should have checked with the mother before grabbing the boy.
Yeah.
But and, you know, I'm sure they could have dealt with it better, but, you know, €7,500 seems a bit extreme for something which is a bit of a non-event, really.
Yeah. I'm just concerned about any, you know, potential chilling effect it might have on shop assistants. Because if they start just letting people walk out of the shop with goods, it'll affect the stores, you know. It affects the bottom line, you know, it'll affect prices, things like that, and then everybody pays just because.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think it would necessarily be the same sort of story had it been an adult which had been stopped.
No. Do you know many adults that nick one packet of crisps?
In all honesty, not really. Having said that, I don't know many adults who nick anything.
I was also quite surprised that they, you know, they had the guts to grab the child. For,
yeah, absolutely.
With, you know, because everybody these days is quite, they, you know, they think before, you know, because wherever children are concerned, you know, the warning signs up.
Yeah.
And to grab a child by the arm over a matter of a bag of crisps, you know, that shopkeeper, I don't know, it's just maybe he or she wasn't thinking.
Well. It did take place in Ireland, though, so, you know.
How would that make it?
Who knows what was going through their head? And in case you think I'm being xenophobic, I am, you know, half Irish, so I can make these comments.
Have you got anything now?
Well, I've got one which I think we can mention. which I do believe your brother's actually asked us to discuss in the past. And this is a new story which has actually come up today, so we didn't cover it in the last segment, which got deleted somehow.
No.
Which is about the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
The incoming chief executive, now coming into BP following the previous guy standing down, Tony Hayward standing down, a guy called Bob Dudley, who happens to be American as well, is saying that the oil cleanup will be scaled back. Apparently, due to the fact that the oil has been stopped flowing out from the well
Right.
for several days now, and the actual surface oil is, the skimming teams aren't clearing up as much as they were. They're sort of starting to scale it back a little bit so that, get people off of beaches, and people can start going to beaches again without having to see people in hazmat suits walking up and down the beach. So I guess really, it's not so much necessary about this story, but what do we feel about it? What do we feel about the oil spill?
Well, I feel that there's been a lot of evidence to support a lot of criticism of BP over it, a lot of mismanagement, cutting corners, and we've seen this before in the past, cutting corners and mistakes, just trying to save money, causes horrific accidents, and nobody seems to learn from this.
Well, it's capitalism driving, really, isn't it? It's putting profit ahead of other concerns.
And when you fine companies and the fine is so pathetic that the company just looks at it as another a running cost.
Sure. I mean, I would say in defense of BP, excuse me, that they I think they have fronted up eventually
I
in
don't think
this.
they really had a choice though, did
No,
they?
they didn't, but they have set up a considerable fund to help the people affected by this recover. But the thing which for me is, I think, the most interesting point is, I mean, this oil spill is absolutely horrendous. It's got a massive effect on the marine life, the coastal wildlife, and indeed the industry which relies upon the sea in that area. I'm sure will have an effect for years to come.
Yeah.
But something which really seems to have been forgotten in this whole story is that actually 11 people died when the initial explosion happened on the rig. Which I think is absolutely tragic. You've got 11 guys there who've lost their lives, possibly due to negligence on behalf
Yeah, definitely. And I think
of
that's
the
what
company.
that'll come out now. Now it's been capped off and it's under control, I think people are going to start looking back at the beginning of all this. I mean, there's going to be an inquiry, definitely. Somebody's going to have to maybe do some jail time for this, because I think, especially in Britain,
Well,
when
it's
they
been a bit of
brought in the
corporate manslaughter.
corporate manslaughter, because they realised that the fines weren't doing anything, they said, well, okay, we're going to have to start putting some directors in prison. So, have you heard any chance of that
I
happening
haven't
here?
heard anything about that actually, being on the radar and happening, but, why not? I mean, 11 guys have lost their lives. Should the investigation find that it was due to negligence on behalf of BP, well, yeah, absolutely, somebody should take responsibility for it. I guess it's a very similar case if I'm driving my car down the road and I, through my own error, hit somebody and knock them down. I haven't intentionally gone out to kill them, but that is manslaughter nonetheless, and I do jail time for that.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
there's no real difference in that at all. So, the only thing which I do hope is that the inquiry which is run doesn't turn out to be a witch hunt, which I think, judging from where the media have picked up on it and the politicians have picked up on it in America,
Yeah.
I think if they run it, that's exactly what it will be, a witch hunt.
Yeah, and it's got to be the people who are actually really responsible. You'll see a lot of buck passing. I don't want to see any junior staff. It's got to be somebody who's really making the decisions if anybody's gonna, do some jail time for this.
Yeah.
The other thing I heard, I wanted to talk about this a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't get round to it. But there was this whole because President Obama was giving BP a hard time and making them cough up all this money. Obviously, it had a terrible effect on the company's shares.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fallout of that was there was a lot of people that had investment portfolios, pension funds, with a very heavy interest in BP. And so, because it affected those funds, a lot of people lost out on their pensions, or they will be losing out on their pensions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess, I feel great sympathy for those people, who've paid into pensions over the years to ensure they have a decent return on their retirement so that they can live comfortably. I've absolutely got every sympathy for them. I think it's a bad thing. However, I think it does show the danger of linking such things to, financial investments.
Well, the point I wanted to make was they were there and they were actually, decrying the president, saying, "Oh, because he's been tough on BP, he's costing us money."
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think the point is, though, whilst I do believe, from what I've seen so far, BP are in the wrong, I do think maybe Obama was on an absolute political point scoring mission, and was trying to play on the people's consciences and people's feelings and emotions, and so therefore was building BP up to be this giant monster in somebody else's eyes, where, okay.
Well, someone had to pay for it,
No,
though.
absolutely, I totally agree with that. But I think Obama went beyond just saying we want reparations for what's happened, and actually started vilifying, seriously vilifying BP at every opportunity that he had. And it seemed to me it was certainly a political point scoring exercise. Because, okay, this particular well's gone wrong, and there's been a terrible fallout from it. But America would have been quite happy had that those oil barrels be barrels of oil been, shipped up and sold,
Oh yeah.
and they'd have quite happily taken some of the profits on from that, with no issues at all. And let's not forget, BP isn't the only company which runs such well, despite the fact they're known to be risky. I'm sure there's plenty of American companies doing it as well. But BP were made out to be this, money grabbing, profit driven, out to get whatever they can get company, which at the end of the day is what any massive multinational company is all about.
No, definitely.
So I think maybe he went a bit too far. I mean, he certainly went too far in playing up the whole British Petroleum this, British Petroleum that. BP hasn't been British Petroleum for a number of years.
No, I mean it's not really, I know it's got its origins in Britain, but it's an international company now, and that
Absolutely.
is why they rebranded to BP
Yeah,
permanently.
rather than British Petroleum, absolutely. So I do think Obama went off on one a bit, to be honest with you.
But the only point I want to make is these people that are blaming Obama for the problems of their pension funds, I think they need to be actually looking and to blaming the fund managers and the people who expose them to such a risky investment.
Well, I mean, I guess really, it's in normal times that wouldn't be seen as being a risky investment. I think the people they need to be blaming are the people who made the decisions, which ultimately led to 11 people dying and this massive oil spill in the country. Because had these events not happened, they would have been quite happy on their returns.
No, sure, but I still think the fund managers have to take a little bit of responsibility for putting such a. Because the idea with a pension fund is you're meant to spread it evenly.
Putting all their eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I think they put too much of it in, and people are, they think it's easier to blame the president because he's, whatever his motives are, they shouldn't really be blaming him. They should be blaming the people that have mismanaged their money. It's more mismanagement.
Yeah, sure.
So.
By bankers.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. So, it's me.
It's you.
Okay, I saw this story because it's my kind of thing. It's homeopathy. Okay.
Homeopathy.
Now, I know that you know a couple of people that are interested in this as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, it's not just me sounding off on this. There's people that are interested in this kind
Oh
of thing.
yeah, absolutely. I think it's gosh, homeopathy is a huge lucrative market at the moment, and there are still some very serious skeptical people out there who question that. So yeah.
Well, I'm one of those skeptical people. And I don't know. Have you heard the recent news? The UK government have said, well, they originally said that they didn't feel that funding homeopathy on the NHS was a good idea anymore because scientific evidence had come out from clinical trials saying that it was no better than placebo.
Absolutely, and I think, if that's the case and the evidence is there showing that it doesn't, the British government are absolutely quite right to pull out of it. I see no issue with that. I mean, it is a bit of a strange in homeopathy. It's for myself, I have used homeopathic remedies which have seemed to work, but I'm quite willing to admit that it may have been a placebo effect. I was having difficulty sleeping. I tried this particular remedy, and it helped a great deal. Or, so it seemed to me. My sleeping pattern was restored to normal, and everything was great. But was that a placebo effect? I mean, I don't know. I'm a bit,
Or was
I
it
am a bit,
coincidence? Was it
yeah,
something
exactly.
else?
I am a bit skeptical about it myself, to be honest with you. But I guess I am open to trying things as well.
But and that's my problem is with the homeopathy thing, is there's a lot of people that have tried it, used it, and they've had what they perceive as a positive result.
I mean, as I understand it, most homeopathic treatments are really just sugar pills.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on the idea. I don't know if you understand how exactly they do it.
Well, I know they like sort of like refine a mineral or whatever down to a certain point that it's, like a one part in a billionth or whatever to actually go into the remedy.
Yeah, the idea is you take something, and it's usually something that could be potentially quite harmful in large quantities, things like, arsenic. And then they create a solution out of it. But then they keep on diluting the solution, diluting it, until eventually you've got, as you said, like it's one part per million. Now, they're not saying that it's that one part per million that does something, but they're claiming that by having this, whatever the substrate is in the water, what happens is it has this effect on water molecules so that they retain a memory of, yeah? So straight away, it fails the plausibility test for me because I'm not aware of any mechanism within water that allows it to have memory of things.
No, I can't say that I am either.
And I mean, you can take it to absurdity then and just say, well, all water has, the memory of poo on it. So it's highly absurd, and no one seems to think like about this really. I mean,
Well, it wasn't something that I'd heard before, actually, that water retains the memory of a compound which had been in it. Even as I'm saying that, I'm just thinking it's just absolutely farcical.
I mean, chemistry has, they took it serious enough to look into it, and they've just said, look, I don't know why we waste our time. There's nothing in chemistry that says that there's a mechanism for this within water or any other liquid chemical. So it fails the plausibility test, and it has been proven time and time again that it's failed the scientific method as well, because ultimately, rather than taking lots of anecdotal evidence, people that have said I've tried it and it seemed to work, or people that just said I tried it, oh, and it definitely works.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'll talk on the anecdotal side of things. I'm a case in point. I tried this substance out. It was arsenic amalgam. It seemed to work for me. Coincidentally, at the same time, a couple of my friends had the same problem, and I actually recommended to them that they tried it. Now, I haven't followed that up asking them if it works, but I was very conscious of when I was telling them that, go and get a homeopathic remedy, that actually I maybe tell them to go and waste their money on something. So I was always quite sort of wary of telling them and suggesting they should try it, but I can understand where they were. You get to a point where you just need to try something, and so I recommended to them, but I sort of put the caveat around it that it is a homeopathic remedy and it may not do anything. It may just be a placebo effect, but I certainly need to follow up to find out if actually it had any effect on them.
Or if anyone actually went and bought it, or they just thought, oh, Steve's a bit of a muppet, but I ain't got the guts to tell it to his face, I'll just pretend.
Maybe. I would hope they would have the guts to tell me, though, to be honest with you.
Oh, right, okay, fair enough. Right, so you got a good relationship with your friends then. So I just one other question. How much did it cost? Was it expensive?
To be honest, I haven't got a clue. I really don't remember.
No.
It was. I went into sort of Boots one day, asked them if there was anything which they had which could help me establish a better sleeping pattern. They didn't think sleeping tablets would be appropriate because it wasn't. I was having difficulty going off to sleep. I was having difficulty staying asleep, and being very restless in sleep as well. So they suggested I try this arsenic amalgam, and I gave it a go. And like I said, you know, it intents and purposes seemed to work for me.
So who gave you this advice, though?
It was the pharmacist at Boots.
Right. Okay. And he what was that? Is like, oh, I don't know. You know, probably not gonna be able to answer the question. Was it some kind of professional opinion, or had he just read some literature somewhere? And
I don't know. I mean, you know, she did quite a large file on the homeopathic remedies behind the counter.
Right.
Because, you know, she looked it up and found the right one and said, oh, this is the one you want.
All right. Oh, right. So she went to the folder.
Oh, yeah.
And then looked up sleeplessness, probably.
Yeah,
and then just found that. All right. Okay. That's great. Yeah. So it was just... But ultimately, the point we were going to make is that every time they do a scientific controlled study...
Yeah.
You know, something where you've got, you know, a control group so you can test to see whether it is actually the homeopathic remedy that's having the effect, every time it comes back no better than placebo, or it's statistically insignificant, or, you know, if it is one of those that confirms it, most studies say no.
Yeah,
it's not. But it seems to me, from the government report, that they've decided that maybe we shouldn't stop funding homeopathic remedies, because, you know, we want to give people choice.
But you know what? I disagree with that. I think I'd rather see that money better spent on actually finding a cancer treatment or a cure for AIDS, to be honest with you, rather than putting money into something which, so far, no scientific studies have shown there any real value in it.
Yeah, and I just I don't accept that a choice between something that works and something that doesn't work is a choice over how to, you know, get better.
Yeah.
That's not a choice in my book. And the guy that wrote this article, if I could just find his name, Martin Robbins, he had a great analogy. He said, imagine if you went to a chemist and asked for a condom and they gave you a choice of a Durex or a sock. I mean, that kind of highlights
the ridiculousness, doesn't it, really? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. But I do think that, you know, this does dovetail quite nicely with the next story,
right?
Which is the story of the couple in Oregon, in the good old US of A, who let their child suffer what I can only imagine was absolutely excruciating pain, because they believed that she could be healed solely through prayer.
Yep, I saw this story straight away. I think we both saw it in the same place, didn't we? Because we follow the same.
It was Darren Brown.
Darren Brown on Twitter. Yeah. So this poor young girl, Aliana, or Elena, sorry. She, you know, she's only what, 3?
I believe that's right. Yeah, just 3.
Yeah. She's got this massive. I mean, just you need to see the picture, I think, to really appreciate how.
Well, yeah. I mean, just to put it into some sort of idea for people, she's basically got a lump the size of a cricket ball above her eye.
Yeah. And this, it's some swollen blood vessels, basically. And what it's doing is, as it's expanding, it's pushing down on her eye in the eye socket. And it's, you know, potentially, you know, it was going to leave her blind until the courts and health workers intervened. The problem is, the parents thought, what is the best way that we can treat our child with this quite obvious illness?
Yeah.
Now, they thought the best way to deal with it was to pray and to splash some anointing oil on the child every time they changed the nappy. For me, that's just completely ridiculous, and I class that kind of behaviour, I mean, you can call it just, you know, ignorance or whatever, but I class that as child abuse.
Well, it's neglect, isn't it, really? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, look, I'm a Christian, and I do believe in prayer, and I do believe that, you know, prayer can have a very positive effect, particularly for the spiritual well-being of someone. But, you know, Nowhere in the Bible does it say, "Thou shalt not take medicine," or the medicine, is the devil, or something like that, medicine is there, it's something which is there to help us. I don't think there's anything in there which says, you shouldn't take it. And I can't understand where this couple are coming from if that's what they believe. I don't know where they've come to this conclusion.
Yeah, I mean the Catholics could say the same about stuff that you believe, though.
Well, I'm sure they could, but what I believe isn't going to affect somebody's life in that way. I'm not going to see somebody suffering in pain. So fine, go for it, say what you like. But
But
I wouldn't see somebody deliberately suffering because they haven't had medicine.
the point of this was, I mean, this is the most dangerous type of belief system. I mean, they're part of what the followers of Christ Church in Oregon City. Now, from the description and from the research I've done on this, it's almost a textbook cult. I
Sure.
mean, I probably throw that word around very loosely a lot of the time to describe a lot of things. But to be fair, I mean, these people talking about closed community, I mean, that is one of the big things here.
Kind of one step away from the Branch Davidians, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're all there reinforcing their ideas on each other, and obviously they've decided that women, or I'm going to single out women here because apparently there's been a lot of stories as well of this cult, women dying in childbirth. Because they don't go to a hospital to give birth, or they don't seek medical attention. But the irony is that the men find it acceptable to wear glasses and to go to the dentist.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of misogyny going on in the cult there as well. I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just absolutely tragic, John. It's absolutely tragic that, these people can be so misconstrued so much, to actually really believe this. I mean, I find it absolutely incredible.
So,
Because
yes.
I understand there's been other cases of this, and I'm all for having faith and believing, in miracles then. But I guess, guys, this has happened before where you've had people die and you've had people not get better from illnesses, despite the fact you've been praying for them. Do the maths.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say that, it was just a young couple who'd been holed up in the middle of nowhere, and they didn't have any idea. They were extremely naive.
Yeah, I mean, you could kind of forgive them then, couldn't you?
Well, I don't know about that. I still think they're idiots, but
They're idiots, but you can kind of, if they've been led to that belief and they haven't got an experience or anything different, you can kind of give them some sort of leeway. But, to be in a community where this sort of thing has happened before and people haven't recovered, I think it's negligent and it does smack of child abuse, really.
there's two things. First of all, it is their belief that, if people die, it's because they're meant to die. It is God's will. Okay, now for me, that's a very harmful belief.
I totally agree.
And as you probably point out, there's no scriptural backing for that at all whatsoever. But not just that. This couple, as I said, it's not just a case of them being naive. They've lived in this community. The local courts and the local health officials have arrested, tried, and prosecuted other people from within this cult and within their community several times over the last couple of years for this kind of behaviour. So to say that they're not aware, okay, of the issue is a load of rubbish.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they, as far as I'm concerned, they are willfully neglecting their child. The important part of this story as well is Oregon State, originally, they protected these people. They protected the parents because it was a religious belief. They weren't prosecuted. Now that has changed, so that there are prosecutions, but unfortunately, it seems that when it comes to sentencing, the judges are still allowed to be lenient and either suspend sentences or give very light custodial sentences. So, I mean, when I read this story, I've seen so many of these stories over the last couple of years. It still never fails to sicken me.
Well, I just think maybe that actually this couple does need to be made an example of. and the other league agency needs to go out of the window here.
Well, I don't think they deserve it in the first place, in any shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would be...
I mean, they're not even contrite.
No, exactly. I guess if they were contrite, and if, as we discussed earlier, it had been, you know, a naive young couple really not understanding what they're doing because they've been brainwashed into this crazy belief system, then, you know, I can kind of see the case for leniency. But, you know, this couple here, they're not contrite about it. They would do it again, I'm sure, if they had the situation.
Yeah. I mean, they're pleading not guilty.
They just don't deserve to have children.
No, definitely not. And until they start seeing the rest of civilized society showing them that this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't think they can hide behind the First Amendment of, you know, oh, well, we've got our rights to our beliefs. I'm thinking, if your beliefs are hurting other people, then I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Absolutely, 100% agree with you. I mean, I also very much feel the same when it comes to, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses, who would refuse a blood transfusion to a child because of their beliefs. Now, if you're an adult, you can make that decision, and, you know, rightly or wrongly, you live or die by that decision.
Yeah, I mean, there's a story, I think it was 6 months ago now, 16-year-old lad ended up in hospital, Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
He refused, the nurses were pleading with him to take blood, and he didn't, and he died.
And that's just absolutely tragic, because there's no reason not to.
Yeah.
I think in those circumstances where you've got somebody there who is under the age of consent, who can't make that decision themselves, you know, I actually think the decision should be taken out of the hands of the parents and should be made purely on a medical basis by the professionals who can actually make the
decision. I think in the UK that does happen quite a lot.
That's absolutely right as well.
Yeah. You know, I think they got to petition a judge, but I've heard there have been some good outcomes in those situations
rather than
idiotic outcomes.
How many people do you know who've been brought up as, say, for example, a Christian, an Anglican, say, who, when they've, you know, reached an age where they can reasonably think for themselves and reason out thought, have actually decided that, no, they don't believe. You know, and have gone away from the church. Now, in this circumstance, you've got a child who needs blood, can't have it, but because her parents got this, or his parents got this belief system, the child ends up dying. That's not giving that child, you know, a fair crack at life, is it, really? And who knows, they may have grown up and completely rejected their upbringing by that point, you know?
I mean, even that 16-year-old, you know, I don't remember all the details of the story. I'm guessing he's pretty much, he still lived at home with his parents. He's still in that environment.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people don't question things until...
until they get out and
see the world.
Different things, yeah.
I mean, most people don't question a lot of things until they get into university.
Yeah.
That's always an eye-opener for people, I think.
Absolutely.
But I don't think parents should be able to make such harmful decisions to their children.
No, I absolutely totally agree with you.
So, I mean, having a child surely is the most, you know, it's a job, isn't it? It's a privilege.
Yeah.
And I think you shouldn't be using it for your own ends. You know, I'm not into a lot of these... people are just having more babies for Jesus at the end of the day. That's how I see it. You know, especially people who don't want to use any contraceptives, they'd rather just have 14 kids, none of them which end up having a great life because, you know, the money spread so thinly.
Yeah.
I feel very strongly about these kinds of things because it always seems to affect the children.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got anything for me?
The story today which has come out about their funding for Trident.
Ah, Trident. Yes.
Yeah.
We haven't heard from Trident for quite a while, have we, since the election?
Since the election, indeed. Now, you know, as we know from the election, the Conservative government and the then Labour government were quite keen on pushing through this extortionate amount of money to support the Trident system. Now, the Liberal Democrats at the time were against that and they wanted to shelve it, which I absolutely agreed with. It seemed to make absolute perfect sense to me. So yeah, it's come up again, and George Osborne, the Chancellor, has told the MOD that if they want to pursue the renewal of Trident, the MOD are actually going to have to fund the cost themselves, rather than it coming out of central treasury funds.
Which it was meant to come from the Treasury.
It was meant to come from the
Yeah.
treasury, yeah.
And now I remembered this, because at the time it was completely ridiculous. You had the Conservatives and you had Labour, and they were saying, no, we really need this. As you said quite rightly, Liberal Democrats said, no, we don't want to renew it. They were then straw-manned basically by the media and by the other two parties saying, oh, they're going to leave us defenceless.
Yeah.
Which was a load of rubbish, because they
Well, it's
didn't
just
say,
scaremongering, isn't
yeah,
it? Let's
they
be
didn't
honest.
say they wanted to get rid of all nuclear weapons. They just said they weren't going to replace it with a like-for-like system. Now all of a sudden, I think it's really dawned on Mr. Osborne that there's no money in the pot for this anyway.
No.
So whereas the Lib Dems are hoping that they would be able to use that money,
In other projects.
yeah. And
Paying off a deficit.
They'd have been a bit shafted. They wouldn't have had any money in the pot.
Yeah.
But either way, Trident wouldn't have been coming out of the Treasury.
Absolutely.
So now, if it's coming out of the MOD, this is going to impact troops.
Well, it's going to impact troops, it's going to impact our operations in Afghanistan, Iraq, other places around the world. It's got huge implications right across the board. But I have to be honest with you. It's amazing because actually I find myself agreeing with George Osborne, which I never ever thought I would ever find myself saying, to be
Well,
honest with
maybe he's
you.
been hanging around with Vince Cable too much.
Possibly. But I'm trying to find exactly what it is that he said. Yeah, here we go. All budgets have pressure, and I don't think there's anything particularly unique about the Ministry of Defence. I've made it very clear that Trident renewal costs must be taken as part of the defence budget. Absolutely agree with him. I don't see why myself as a taxpayer should be funding something.
Well, you still are.
No, but I mean additionally
Right.
to the military on top of what we already are funding. It is the old cliche, but there are hospitals, there are other things which need that
Things
funding.
which I think are more important.
Absolutely, than the nuclear deterrent, because who is our enemy these days?
Yeah, I mean, we just don't have any need to nuke an area the size of Russia three times over anymore.
No, absolutely not. I mean, in the Cold War, our enemy, in inverted commas, was very clear. That was Russia and the USSR.
And you might even claim that the mutual assured destruction policy at the time may have actually averted nuclear war. I mean, we
Yeah,
don't know
absolutely.
what things were like back then, to be fair. But they're out of touch if they think that we still need something.
Well, what are you going to do? I mean, at the moment, our main threats come from terrorist cells.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do? You get a guy on the London Underground with a bomb in his rucksack. What are you going to do? You're going to nuke him.
Exactly,
You
it's just ridiculous.
can't do it. Let's be realistic. And if you want to invest that money on the prevention of terror, okay, fine. Maybe that is a better place to spend it. But Trident is outdated, and I think we
Like
need to
you
be
could buy
looking
a
at.
newer, better, cheaper system.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is all just the old, well, we made this contract a lot, we made this deal a long time ago with the Americans, because it is an American system.
Right, I didn't even realize that, to be honest with
Yeah,
you.
it's an American system, and because maybe at the time they promised the Americans that we'd keep it, all this time, they don't want to go back on the deal. Or maybe they believe the hype of the media that we will be defenseless. But I can't believe that a serious, educated politician believes that, because it's not the
Well, no,
case.
absolutely not. And the point is, we've still got the current Trident system in the meantime.
Yeah. Everyone thinks that it's like out of date, that it's just going to stop.
It's still a nuclear bomb which can devastate, a million miles of countryside in a single second,
Yeah. So, yeah, it is ridiculous. I'm still not enjoying the Conservatives, because that if the money was there in the treasury, they
Absolutely.
Would be happy to spend
No, no,
it.
if the money was there, they would have spent it on it, and I totally understand that. But I think it does show good signs for the coalition that actually they are reining their necks in, and they can see that actually they do need to do things for the good of the country.
Yeah. Do you think the coalition's working?
I still think it's a bit too early days. But I think it's still a bit of a honeymoon period, which is why I am finding myself saying things like, I do agree with George Osborne, and David Cameron was right on this or right on that. You know, I think it's part of the honeymoon period that when there comes a serious challenge to this coalition, I think that's when we're going to see a different side of it. So I'm still holding judgment at the moment, but I am glad to say that so far, whilst I still have concerns about the coalition, I'm actually happy to see a different form of politics to what we've had previously in this country, because I'm just sick to death of the point scoring, the cheap point scoring against each other, rather than actually, I'm a politician, I want to do my best to serve my constituency, to serve my country.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that segues quite nicely into another story this week about the behaviour of the Labour Party again, and you were talking about point scoring. And what's been going on in the Commons this week over the proposed alternative vote referendum.
Yep.
So this is Labour, who, when they were wooing the Lib Dems in the run-up to the election, said, oh no, no, we'd love to have the alternative vote. We're all for electoral reform. Whereas the Conservatives are saying no way. And it's probably one of the main reasons why there's a lot of people thinking that a Lib-Lab coalition, even though, personally, I think it would have been a travesty if it had happened, because they couldn't have sold it to the country, I don't think. Especially with Gordon, if they tried to keep Gordon Brown at the helm.
Well, I think that was the sticking point, wasn't it, with the deal, was that the Liberals, Democrats, did say, Gordon's got to go.
Yeah.
Because, absolutely, in political terms, Gordon Brown at the end of the election was toxic. There was absolutely no way he could possibly stay on as Prime Minister in anything other than a Labour-run government.
No, sure. Getting back to the story. What's happened is, because in order to simplify the electoral system, the Conservatives and the Lib Dems are backing an idea to redefine the boundaries of all of the different
constituencies.
Yes, of all the constituencies, to make them of equal or roughly equal size, because that way, technically, if you look at it technically, that means a vote, all votes are equal. Your vote
from
is
an
worth,
area.
Yeah. Rather than if you lived in smaller areas or bigger areas.
High density population areas.
Yeah, exactly. You've got, for example, you've got a constituency with a very large city in it.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of votes in that city. Usually, they're going to be Labour voters.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the city, rural areas, you're going to get Conservative voters.
Mm-hmm.
But because there's that large sort of imbalance there, you're going to get that constituency is forever going to be dominated by Labour.
Sure.
So what they want to do is they just want to try and make it fair, so that no matter what voting system they use, there will be this fairness. Now, Labour don't like that.
Yeah.
And you can see why. Because they own the inner city still. I mean, they didn't lose the election by a stupid amount. It wasn't the landslide. Well, it definitely wasn't a landslide, because we got a coalition out of it. But they weren't that far behind. And I was genuinely surprised. I thought they were going to get punished a lot more. Mm. And that is due to the fact that they still have these constituencies, these strongholds, inner city areas, where there's a lot of Labour tribalism. They're not happy with it. And because they're not happy with it, they said that they're going to throw their teddy out the pram and they're going to vote against Davey, even though
they'd supported it in the coalition formation phase.
Yeah. I mean, they said that they supported it for the last 13 years, but they just didn't get around to putting the law into place, which personally I think was the biggest lie Yeah, I've heard for a long time. So, what, you have any thoughts on this? I mean, you have voted Labour in the past.
Absolutely, up until the last election, I would quite happily say that I voted Labour and I was proud to vote Labour. I've always believed, however, that a form of proportional representation is absolutely necessary in this country's politics. And you only have to look at the way the votes were split in the last general election to see just how desperate the situation is. I think the Tories got something like just shy of 12 million votes. The Labour got something like 9 million, so maybe a bit less than that. I can't remember the exact figures now. And I think the Liberal Democrats have something like 6 million. Now, that doesn't equate to like the sort of 230 seat difference or something like that between what the Conservatives had and what the Liberal Democrats had.
No, definitely. And how I still don't understand how people can paint that as democracy.
Absolutely not. It clearly isn't, is it? I mean, let's be honest, the Conservatives did not have a clear mandate to govern the country, hence they had to form the coalition. So, democracy would be served much better in this country by a form of proportional representation where each party has that, equal representation depending on the number of people who voted for them. Absolutely 100% support proportional representation.
But there's a lot of people that say, without this first past the post system, they don't like the idea of coalitions. They say, well, we're never going to have strong government.
I disagree. I mean, there's a lot of countries in the world which do have strong governments who rely on coalitions. I mean, the New Zealand government, I think, is one of them where they run a proportional representation system. And
Germany's another coalition country?
their country hasn't fallen apart for it.
No, definitely not.
But what it does mean, I suppose, is that it goes back to that point I was making earlier, is that it stops the for want of a better word, the political dick swinging. Because you can't have the cheap point scoring against a different party because actually you may have to work with them.
No, exactly. And the other thing is, all those people that said, oh, we got to have this first past the post to make sure we got strong government. Well, it didn't work last time.
No,
So,
exactly. We
reality.
ended up with a hung parliament despite first past the post.
Yeah, so reality kind of refutes their argument there. I mean, I think a government that's more proportional is going to be a government that represents this country the best. So, that's my thoughts on it.
Now I've got another story here for you, John, which we did discuss in our first edit of tonight's session,
Yeah.
but they've actually added to the article on the BBC, which puts it in a slightly different light. But I think we should discuss it again,
Okay.
which is something which both you and I agreed was a good thing,
Right.
which was extra funding being given to ensure that the nuclear fusion reactor in the south of France goes ahead and is built. They've actually given an extra 1.4 billion euros to cover the shortfall in building costs.
Right. That's
Now,
good news.
nuclear fusion is something which I think is absolutely fascinating, and it is the future. We need this technology in place, as a human race. We're talking about unlimited energy with no payoff. There's no waste.
Yeah,
Or very
sorry,
limited waste.
no payoff, but yeah, negligible waste. I mean, you get helium out of the fusion of two hydrogen. All right, so you got to do something with the helium, but yeah,
Well, we could all talk with squeaky voices for a while, you know.
yeah, parties would be such more, a fun place.
Absolutely.
It would crash the balloon market, though,
Exactly.
surely.
I think how many balloons you could blow up with it. Exactly. But I'm sure helium is something which can be dealt with a lot better than we can deal with, the current nuclear waste we get.
No, definitely.
So, I think absolutely. I was really glad to see that despite the financial difficulties, which are worldwide at the moment, that there's still commitment to support this. I think it showed some far-sighted governmental thinking
Yeah.
from all the members involved with this decision, which are actually the EU as a bloc, Russia, China, India, Japan, Korea, and the US. So they're all part of this same scheme.
And I also heard in the news this week that Iran are actually funding their own nuclear fusion project. I don't
Yeah,
know if you know about
absolutely.
this.
Good on them.
Yeah, I mean, at first I was, I mean, there's a lot of people that are worried about Iran's ambitions with nuclear energy. They're worried they're going to make a bomb. But personally, I thought, well, good luck to them. But my hopes were slightly dashed when I read the bottom of the article and found out they were only investing the equivalent of £5.2 million.
Yeah, compared to the 1.4 billion extra, which is euros, which have been given to the
Which brings
ITER
it closer
project.
to something like 6 billion of investment or something over the
Yeah.
next couple of years. But poor Iran can only, I don't think they can even afford the bunker.
No, I don't think they can. But it's a step in the right direction, and good luck to them. I think it's just say something which needs to be taken seriously. I'd rather them try and build that than build a bomb, to be honest with you. So hopefully that is what is motivating them, is cheap energy. But the interesting thing where this story's moved on is that now a group of scientists, including Nobel Prize winner George Čapák, have written a letter to the press calling ITER, which is the overall project name, a catastrophe, and arguing that it should be shut down.
Really?
Basically, George Čapák has gone on to say, oh no, sorry, not George Čapák. This is Professor Jack Trainer from Paris University. Has said that the end of ITER would not mean the end of plasma physics or fusion research, just the end of a project which was ill-conceived.
Really?
So that seems like an interesting point to me,
So
because
do they give any information why they consider it ill-conceived?
well, it goes on to say, and also this is a direct quote from Professor Trainer. But it is at a certain point, especially when they say they will take money from other fields to fund this one, you have to say really a clear answer, and the answer is no, don't do that. So I think what they're saying is that 1.4 billion euros is coming from other areas in scientific research,
Right.
which then may suffer from it. Apparently, they suggest that making up the shortfall in ITER's budget is costing France alone the equivalent of 20 years' investment in physics and biology.
Yeah, I mean, it is a lot of money, and yeah, I
But
can.
do you know what? I think it's a payoff which is worth it.
Yeah, I can see both sides of the argument. I
Because
can.
you could maybe recreate, I think they have to some extent recreated fusion in a lab environment, in a small
Yeah.
environment, but it's just not cost effective to do it.
I'm pretty sure that they've managed to have I'm sure they've managed a reaction that's actually given them more energy than they've put in. It's just containing it that
Yeah,
is
I'm not
the.
sure that they have yet.
Oh.
Unless you're thinking of Spider-Man 3 or
Yeah,
2,
maybe.
I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, Doc Ock or something like that.
That's
Yeah,
it, yeah.
could have been. Could have been.
But yeah, I think it's all very well to create it in a lab, but the whole point is that what ITER are planning to do is create it on a scale whereby a country can use it as a viable means to power their national grid.
Yeah, but I see both sides of the argument. I can understand people saying, look, there's all that money could also, if it had gone over here, it could make massive differences in other areas. But at the same time, I understand that, science is this cumulative process. I mean, when people think of it, they kind of think of eureka moments and things like that. But in reality, it's this constant work and fine-tuning.
Well, look. Let's look at this. Okay, just an example. Going back to talk about Triton, I'm just reading more about the overall cost of the project. So we're talking about putting an extra 1.4 billion euros in. Okay. Now, delegates agree. This is the overall cost of the project. Now, delegates agree that the overall cost of the project will be almost US dollars 21 billion, the equivalent of 16 billion euros or 13 billion pounds. Now, to me, you compare that to the 20 billion which our government were originally prepared to invest into Trident.
I wouldn't really call it an investment. Waste is the word you're looking for, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is my absolute point.
No, I think, yeah, you've
If the
definitely got a
Conservative
strong
government
argument
had
there.
come in and they'd, had the funds to push for the Trident renewal, as they said they were going to do in their manifesto, then, that would be 20 billion down the drain, when actually the government could have been investing it in something which is going to benefit mankind rather than destroying it.
Yeah, I mean that 20 billion could just be, the 20 billion that we need to get this thing working.
Absolutely. So yeah, kind of a mixed feelings on that one, I think, but I'm still quite excited by it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it goes ahead. I'm always concerned when you start getting vocal groups saying, we don't think this is good. I'm hoping
It
that.
is only French scientists, though, and let's be quite honest, French are quite militant.
Yeah. If you ever wanted to go into the French podcast market, I think, you've blown it just by a few comments,
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, John, I don't really care.
Anyway, I think we're going to wrap it up, mate.
Are we?
I think we're going to wrap it up because we got plenty of material.
Yeah, I was just going to say, whilst we're talking about, international podcasting, we have actually reached the Antipodes, and Australia in particular.
Really? Is there anyone important? Someone famous?
No, it's my mate Sheldon.
Right. So.
He's seen my Facebook update and my Twitter update, and he's got in on the action. He's given us a couple of topics for our next discussion.
Oh, good. Oh, I look forward to that.
Something for us to look into. So yeah, that's what we look at on our next one. Just one more thing, just to finish off, going back to our earlier Mac versus PC conversation.
Right, okay.
UK troops use iPad app for fire mission training. It was good enough for the UK Army. It's good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I just think it's a very expensive way to start fires, Is it what? Is it because they overheat or they just chuck them on a fire?
Think they take the front off and use the use sort of magnifying glass type
Right, okay, yeah. Ah, I came back on your Mac promotion there. Anyway, guys, it was great doing this for another week. Hopefully, these sound files will save.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, and hopefully it won't take me 3 days to edit it. So, yeah, we'll be able to do another one on Wednesday.
Sweet.
See you later, guys.
See you later.
Isn't real, isn't true.